This is Monday, the 21st of September. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, Washington will be a very busy city this week, hosting foreign dignitaries. Pope Francis is now in Cuba, from where he'll head north to the U.S. Capitol. Later in the week, President Obama will welcome Chinese leader Xi Jinping.
Going into the meeting, it seems that cybersecurity is the top issue.
We will explore both of these visits. One of the top food producing companies has been in the hands of a Chinese company for a while now. VOA's Jim Randall will join us to see how it's doing, and we'll have a recap for you of last night's Emmy Awards. It's all ahead. This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Pope Francis continues his four-day visit to Cuba Monday with stops in Holguín and Santiago in the east before leaving for the United States and UN headquarters on Tuesday. Joining us is International Edition's Victor Beatty. Vic, tell us more.
Hello, Ira. Well, Sunday, the Pope celebrated Mass for tens of thousands in Havana's Revolution Square. He met with both Fidel and President Raul Castro, and separately addressed young people and members of the Catholic clergy. The Reverend Brian Lucas, General Secretary of the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference in Canberra, told me the Pope, who played a key role in the rapprochement between Cuba and the U.S., met with the Castro brothers in an effort to end decades of hostility.
I think what we're seeing here is a move towards reconciliation. There was obviously many, many years of extraordinary hostility, not only between, for example, the Cuban regime and the United States of America, but enormous tensions within Cuba itself as the dictatorship had its impact on the people. What Pope Francis is doing is speaking to the people of Cuba and inviting them to a reconciliation among the different factions within the community. And, of course, we're familiar now with the role that he played in bringing about a greater rapprochement between Cuba and the United States.
How important are his Argentinian roots to his outreach to Latin America, specifically Cuba?
I think the fact that he can speak the language, the fact that he is part of the culture of Central and Southern America, gives him a credibility to begin with. Here is someone who the people of Cuba would say is like one of us, and that gives him an entree. From there, of course, he's able to direct his message and the content of the message to people and invite them to respond.
Francis, of course, the third pope to visit Cuba. Why is Cuba so important?
I think Cuba represents, of course, a regime of the past that was one of oppression and dictatorship. Cuba has its proper role in that part of the world in its relationship both to countries of South America, but also now with the opportunity for some peacemaking with the United States.
How vibrant is the Catholic Church in Cuba? From what I understand, 10% or less of Cubans identify themselves as Roman Catholics.
I think Cuba has, of course, been victim of oppression and dictatorship and an atheistic worldview. So perhaps three generations almost have been lost to a traditional Catholic faith. The remnant is there. The remnant is enthusiastic and vibrant, and we've seen that with the images here in Australia, where I'm speaking from. We've seen the television images, and just only a short while ago, I was able to see, thanks to the wonderful benefits of the internet, the Pope addressing the young people in Havana, and there was certainly an enthusiasm there and an openness. People are searching. They might regard themselves as secularist and atheistic, but people always ask those fundamental questions. What is my life about? Where do I come from? What is my destiny? And the Pope is offering them a way of living that picks up on the gospel message and the promise of Christ, of the fullness of life.
Of course, the Pope visits the United States in just a couple of days. Latest poll says 7 of 10 Americans have a favorable impression of Pope Francis, though they have a less positive view of the Catholic Church as a whole. What do you make of that?
I think that's not unexpected. People tend these days not to have favourable impressions of institutions because their impressions are largely formed by the media messages. It's the same in the United States as it is in Australia, in most Western countries, where the media tends to be, by its nature, anti-institutional. It tends to favour individualism because individualism is what feeds consumerism, and consumerism is what it is that is the lifeblood of advertising in secular media. So you can see the pattern that's there. But the personality of Pope Francis is vitally interesting for people. They see here someone who is different, someone who is not speaking in the idiom of past popes, whose simple gestures, going right back to when he was first elected and he walked into the hostel to pay his own account. These sorts of images are fixed in people's minds, and so they have a favourable impression that here is someone who has something worthwhile to say.
During his six-day U.S. visit, Francis will meet President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden, address a joint meeting of Congress, address a world meeting of families in Philadelphia that could draw up to 1.5 million people, and visit U.N. headquarters in New York.
Busy, busy cities in Cuba and the United States. Thanks so much. International Edition's Victor Beatty once again joining us. Our appreciation. In addition to the visit of the Pope, China's President Xi Jinping makes his first state visit to Washington. Joining us from Beijing is VOA Beijing Bureau Chief William Ide. Bill, it appears as though the Chinese and the American presidents are going to be meeting at a time of some rising tensions between the two countries.
That's right. They sure have a full plate, from the South China Sea issues to cybersecurity. China's relationship with Japan, which is an ally of the United States. There are many areas where these two countries are trying to deal with their relationship and the challenges that rise up. And that's not to mention the other persistent issues that have long been there regarding human rights, whether it be in Tibet or Xinjiang, or just the average everyday citizen in China and the lack of freedoms that they do not enjoy.
Well, you know, if you were to list the thorniest problems, what would be at the top of your list?
Well, at this point, going into the meetings, it seems that cybersecurity is the top issue, and that is because of the impact that it's had on U.S. businesses. We're not talking necessarily about cyber espionage and stealing of maybe information about President Obama's meetings and what he's saying behind closed doors. The president made it clear that what he's really concerned about the most, President Obama, that is the theft of intellectual property and also it could be military hardware, secrets, technology as well.
You know, we haven't even mentioned the stock market plunge recently in China. How much concern is there both in China and you feel in the United States about this?
Well, there's huge concern about that, and I think that we saw that play out in the Fed's decision last week, and also the impact that China's not only the devaluation of the yen, but also what happened in the stock market here, the impact that it had on global markets, and how it was almost like for the first time, you know, China has always had a huge influence, but it was like for the first time, the combination of those two things, the market and the yen, its influence was felt, and the rest of the world was starting to realize, oh, you know, we've got to be really careful about what it is that China does, and we need to have more clarity about these decisions. They can't be made on the cuff, and then everybody else finds out about it in the moment.
Where do you see issues of common ground as she prepares to leave?
Well, we definitely know that in terms of climate change, this has been one of the areas where the two are trying to work together, trying to help set a standard for the rest of the world. And hopefully that one will follow. We'll have to see, you know, what kind of further agreements are made during the visit. The other thing is that she is bringing with him a big entourage of businessmen, so there may be some progress in that area as well. The two countries are also working on a bilateral investment treaty, and it is hoped that some conclusion or some progress will be made during the visit. Regarding that. So those are a few areas where we might see some progress come and should be some high points of the visit.
Well, we know there is opposition to China in the U.S. Congress. What about domestically in China? You talk to some people on the street. You follow, obviously, the political tides in China. Where does the Chinese president stand as far as his population and his government?
Well, obviously, Xi Jinping, through the state media here, has worked very hard to create a following He's referred to as Uncle Xi or Daddy Xi, depending on how you translate it. But there's a lot of almost like a cult of personality that he's built up here since coming to office. But one of the surprising things that we found today when we were out on the streets talking to people was that very few people were paying attention to it. There were a few that knew he was going. There were others that didn't even know that he was, you know, traveling to the United States, making this one of his biggest trips since coming to office, not only because he's going to Washington, but also because he's going to the United Nations as well, and he's going to be addressing the United Nations during his visit. So there really wasn't a lot of attention, I guess, that you felt from people about, you know, this trip. Obviously, though, there was a lot of significance that those we interviewed placed on the relationship and the direction it's heading. And there seems to be concern that from people here, residents here, that the United States cannot or is having a difficult time dealing with China's rise. There are those that express that they're concerned that if things continue to go in the direction they're going right now, there could be some kind of conflict, or conflict could arise between the two countries.
William Ide is VOA's Beijing Bureau Chief, and he joins us from Beijing. And Bill, I thank you so much for spending time with us here at International Edition. Now, joining me here in the studio is our social media editor, Andrew Palczewski, with a look at what's trending today. And Andrew, what's on top of this of your to-do list as far as what people are doing on social media?
Well, the big thing people are worrying about is cybersecurity. Of course, with President Xi coming, this is a big topic that's sure to be discussed between President Obama and President Xi. And so this morning, people are talking about a number of iTunes apps that have been pulled due to malicious software. A couple companies saying that they had some malicious software. They had to pull their apps, release new versions. So a lot of people concerned about that, wondering which apps are going to come next. So there's still a lot of talk about that. And surely this is going to lead into a cybersecurity issue for sure.
Anything we have to do to protect ourselves yet, or we don't know so far?
Keep lookout on social media, but I would check some of the official accounts, maybe from Apple. I think that's how they're going to release some of this information on Twitter. That's how they can get it directly to the people, and people can share it most easily. Emmy Awards were last night, and I know you're going to have a list of some of the winners later on in the show, but one of the big winners was Viola Davis. Viola Davis becoming the first African-American woman to win lead actress in a drama series, and she had a very moving speech that a lot of people praised on social media, where she said, "In my mind, I see a line, and over that line, I see fields of beautiful flowers and white women, outstretched arms, but I can't get across that line." And that was a quote from Harriet Tubman, the anti-slavery crusader, Underground Railroad, ran the Underground Railroad. And so a lot of people saying that she drew a lot of great comparisons to Harriet Tubman, and saying the struggle for actresses in Hollywood, especially African-American actresses, try to get roles in Hollywood. So you have people like Shonda Rhimes, who's the creator of the show that she won for, How to Get Away with Murder. She had Speechless, Oprah Winfrey weighing in, Ellen DeGeneres, a lot of other black actresses, Kerry Washington, another actress, another Shonda Rhimes show scandal that she's on. But there's one actress that's creating some controversy. She's a soap opera star, and her name is Nancy Lee Gran. And she said, "Oh, I'm tired of her speech. All women are struggling. It's not just her. It's not just African-American women." And a lot of people taking offense to that, saying, "Why couldn't you just honor this moment?" So this is probably the moment of this year's Emmy Awards, the television awards. So Nancy Lee Gran, after that rant on Twitter, has gone back and apologized on Twitter and said, "I'm sorry, I misspoke. I shouldn't have said that." But universal support for Viola Davis, and congratulations to her. It's a huge milestone. And the show she's on, How to Get Away with Murder, is one of my favorites. It's a great show. So well done, Viola Davis.
You binged on it already, huh?
I do. I watched it. Actually, I watched it week to week, which is such a rarity these days. Most people binge on the internet.
Nobody
and watch
does
it all
that
over.
Anymore.
I know. Well, that speaks to how good the show is and how good an actress she is as well. So.
Andrew Palczewski, our social media editor here on International Edition. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
While it may not taste as good as other sports drinks, British researchers say that they have found that drinking beet juice supplemented with nitrates, helps athletes get through long sporting events by improving their running performance and boosting their decision-making abilities. The researchers from Exeter University recruited 16 male rugby, hockey, or football players as their test subjects. The athletes were all given about 140 milliliters, a little over a half a glass, of a high nitrate beet juice to drink every day for a week. At the end of the week, sportsmen were given physical and cognitive tests. The Exeter researchers said they saw an improvement in the athletes' running and decision-making abilities after drinking the nitrate-enhanced beet juice. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington, D.C. Welcome from wherever you are hearing or reading this. When a Chinese firm bought the world's largest pork producer, Smithfield Foods, a couple years ago, critics worried about U.S. employment and food safety. This is just part of a multi-billion dollar surge in Chinese investments in the U.S. that are all part of a complicated relationship between the world's two largest economies. That relationship, as we've been telling you, will be under the microscope this week as China's President Xi Jinping makes his first state visit to the United States. Meanwhile, VOA's Jim Randall visited the small rural Virginia town of Smithfield that is home to the iconic U.S. brand and learned the company is doing quite well, thank you, financially, and employment has actually grown.
Farms and cornfields surround Smithfield, and corn feeds pigs that are turned into many kinds of meat products. One of Smithfield Foods' many meatpacking plants is here. It takes a lot of machines and people to operate the world's largest pork producer. And in the past 2 years, Smithfield Foods says it has expanded its workforce by nearly 1,300 to a bit more than 48,000 employees. This workforce helped Smithfield hit a $15 billion sales record in 2014. While the firm is adding people, it is also cutting debt. That impressed the S&P agency, which raised Smithfield's credit rating. Here on Main Street, Smithfield residents have been concerned that Chinese ownership might hurt the economy. John Edwards, publisher of the Smithfield Times, says some thought the company might move its operations and thousands of jobs elsewhere, devastating this community of 8,000.
Well, part of it has to do with the fact that it's China. It's a communist country. People just didn't trust the idea of China owning our biggest industry here.
The town of Smithfield started in 1752, which is very old for a U.S. city. Smithfield cherishes a centuries-old courthouse, which displays very old-fashioned kinds of justice. And Main Street features statues of U.S. founding fathers George Washington and Benjamin Franklin. A longtime resident says change comes slowly here, and people kind of held their breath to see what would happen to Smithfield.
I think we liked what we had, and you always, when you like something, you don't want it to change.
But the mayor says, so far, so good.
Nothing has happened at all. Exactly the same. In fact, actually, it's right much better.
Mayor T. Carter Williams says city tax receipts are up slightly and says the company is looking for more office space for additional employees, though Smithfield Foods would not confirm that. The company declined requests to do interviews and did not allow VOA to shoot video inside its plant. In a written statement, Smithfield officials say they have kept promises to honor union contracts, not fire employees, and keep the current management team in place and the headquarters in the very small town the company is named for. Jim Randall, VOA News, Smithfield, Virginia.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe Get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. Just a reminder to stay with us here on International Edition. We will have full coverage for you of both visits of Pope Francis to the United States, which begins on Wednesday, and he's now in Cuba. And also later in the week, the visit from Chinese President Xi Jinping. Now, we told you we'd tell you about the Emmy Awards, and we'll tell you as much as we have time for. HBO claimed the hardware at the annual Emmy Awards. Viola Davis, John Hamm, Tracy Morgan captured everybody's hearts. In the 67th edition of the TV award show Sunday, Davis became the first woman of color to win Best Actress in a drama series. Hamm was a sentimental favorite for winning Best Actor in his last chance with Mad Men, and Morgan was an emotional surprise in appearing on stage following his traumatic brain injury in an auto accident last year. Well, for sheer award tonnage, it was a triumph for HBO. The pay cable network won 14 awards Sunday night, with Game of Thrones named Best Drama, Veep Best Comedy, and the miniseries Olive Kitteridge Best Limited Series. The next closest network was Comedy Central with 4 awards. And in the Creative Arts Emmys awarded a week ago, and HBO took a total of 43 awards. NBC came in second with 12. The fantasy drama Game of Thrones was the most honored program in any single year. The show totaled 12 awards. Davis won for her portrayal of a lawyer and professor in the ABC freshman drama How to Get Away with Murder. She invoked the words and spirit of 19th century American abolitionist Harriet Tubman, accepting the award, as you heard from Andrew Palshevsky just a bit earlier. And The Daily Show with Jon Stewart won the Emmy for Best Variety Show, beating two other comedy hosts who ended long-running programs the year, Comedy Central colleague Stephen Colbert and CBS Late Show host David Letterman. Colbert this month replaced Letterman. That's our show. Visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks so much for being with us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Economic disparity, often in combination with other factors, can open the door to violent extremism. Across many parts of the Middle East and North Africa, economic policies have led to the creation of parallel but deeply polarized economies, said U.S. Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, Energy, and the Environment, Catherine Novelli. One is formal and often extends the full range of society's benefits to a relatively small and privileged group, but exacerbates perceptions of unfairness. The other economy is informal, marked by insecurity and characterized by low pay and little hope for a better future. According to the World Bank, the typical country in the Middle East and North Africa produces about 27% of its GDP in the informal economy and employs 67% of its labor force informally. In many countries, it is almost impossible for an individual to move from the informal sector to the formal sector, said Undersecretary Novelli. Women, she said, participate in the Middle East's workforce at the world's lowest rate. Many women, when they can't find jobs in the formal sector, become discouraged over time and end up dropping out of the labor force. ISIL has exploited these frustrations in its recruitment efforts by promising women valued positions in their state, and hundreds of women have fallen prey to this narrative. It is important to note that ISIL wants to cast blame on capitalism, or modernity, for creating many of these inequities. In the Middle East and North Africa, ISIL presents a false choice between the unjust status quo and a romanticized version of a 7th-century economy. The most effective way to confront these challenges is for countries to pursue sound market economy principles, embrace transparency and the rule of law, and ensure that all people have the opportunity to succeed. Embracing such reforms can go a long way toward blunting the message of violent extremists.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.